If you're just joining us, we're talking about influenza here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, it puts out a weekly flu report. It estimates that so far this season there have been at least 9.7 million flu illnesses and 4,800 deaths from the flu. And it's not too late to get vaccinated. What questions do you have about this year's dominant flu strain? Influenza B is hitting children hard. Have kids been out sick at your school? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. James Conway is a professor in the Division of Pediatric Infectious Disease at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He's also the Associate Director for Health Sciences in the Global Health Institute. Dr. Conway, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
What can you tell us right now about the spread of flu this season?
Well, it's been an interesting season. It started a little earlier than usual and started in both the southeast and southwestern United States at the same time, and then has gradually worked its way north and has hit here in December. The most interesting thing has been the strains that are circulating. You know, we tend to start out most seasons with influenza A, and then kind of move towards influenza B kind of later in the season. This year, we were surprised by the fact that it started out as a predominantly type B circulating strains, but coupled with that was then the H1N1 2009 outbreak strain circulating of the A strain at the same time. So we've got about two-thirds of the cases have been this B strain, and about a third have been the H1N1 A strain.
And I understand B strain hits children particularly hard?
Yeah, it's been traditionally the viral strain that really hits kids the worst. I mean, that's what we've seen already this year. So there's been about 32 pediatric deaths so far that have already been attributed mostly in healthy, unimmunized kids, which is, you know, significantly higher than most years at this early part of the season.
And UW Health in particular, is seeing an uptick in year-over-year hospitalizations to date for flu. Is that just because flu season has just started earlier? What are you noticing there in hospitalizations?
Yeah, I think it's been an earlier season than usual for most of the facilities. And I think that's been the thing that's really stuck out for most people. As overall, I think the severity for the adults and older individuals has been about the same as what it is this time of year. So it's really been primarily the number of outpatients, especially pediatric patients, I think that people have really been noting.
One thing everyone wants to know is how well is the flu vaccine protecting people this year?
Yeah, you always hear these numbers thrown around. I mean, I think early in the season it's really hard. I think about 50% is about the protection rate we're seeing. And you got to be careful when you look at those numbers, because obviously some of the media really likes to sort of belittle the vaccine as being not particularly useful. There's two things we look at. One is, in a black and white world, is it completely protecting you against the disease? And so that's where they're getting this ballpark 50% of people that get the vaccine don't get sick at all if they're exposed. But the thing you have to recognize is that if people get sick and have had the vaccine, they tend to have much milder disease. And so what we've really seen is that it's the unimmunized people that are the ones that are having the most severe disease.
Remind us who should get the flu shot.
Pretty much everybody at this point. You know, we started out with it being the older individuals and those in high-risk situations that have underlying chronic diseases. But over time, we've realized that the benefit to society and to individuals really suggests that everybody can benefit from the vaccine. So it's basically everybody 6 months and up should be vaccinated. And it's really not too late to get vaccinated at this point. We're kind of overall at about the standard average of where we expect to be for the number of cases, which means that we still really haven't hit the bulk of the season, which really comes in after the holidays as kids go back to school and start to recirculate these things. And so January, February really tend to be the peak times. And so there's plenty of vaccine available. And for those people that haven't been vaccinated, there's still plenty of benefit from doing so.
Talking with Dr. James Conway, he's a professor in the Division of Pediatric Infectious Disease at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. We're looking at the flu season and what we see so far. Dr. Conway, one child under the age of 10 recently died due to the flu. How can parents and teachers help protect kids from the flu?
Well, obviously, immunization is the key thing. And, you know, as much as we can, trying to get people to maintain some level of infection control, quarantine type stuff. So for people that do have illness, either themselves or their kids. You know, this is especially the time of the year that it's the kind thing to do, it is try to stay out of circulation and stay home as much as possible. The other is that, you know, for most respiratory illnesses that you think about, you know, the common colds and things like that, fever is not a particularly noteworthy feature for most people. And so if you've got respiratory symptoms with fever, you know, especially if you've got muscle aches or headache, the nice thing about influenza is that it's fully treatable by antiviral drugs, unlike a lot of the other colds and things like that. So if you've got a respiratory illness with fever, it's a really good idea to call and check in with your provider, and plenty of providers in the region will even prescribe antiviral flu medications if you make if you meet certain criteria to be considered likely to have flu, not even make you go in and get tested or anything. And it's partially for people's best interest just to not have to be out and dealing with the winter and stuff when they're sick, but it's also to protect other people in those medical offices from being exposed unnecessarily. But this is a, you know, very treatable virus. There's a couple of different products on the market that have good activity against both flu A and B. Both oseltamivir and baloxavir are readily available and really can prevent most of the severity of the disease. The other thing to mention is that, you know, there's a, while they work best in the first 48 hours of the illness, you know, we recognize that they still have some benefit, at least in preventing the real severity of the disease, even if they're started on the third, fourth day. So people and providers really shouldn't be reluctant to provide the antivirals. And there's really very little viral resistance in the country. So we're looking at, you know, probably around 99% of the strains circulating are susceptible to these antiviral medications.
Well, even with the positive effects of the antiviral medications, are we any closer in eradicating influenza?
No, I mean, it's still such a poor virus at replicating that it just constantly makes mistakes. And so there's this constant, what we call antigenic drift during the season that they're constantly mutating. So to get a really good vaccine, the need is to try to figure out some part of the virus that doesn't change over time that would allow good immunity then against that stable part of the virus. So there's a, you know, obviously a lot of interest. I mean, this is kind of the holy grail of vaccines in many ways. And the federal government is putting more funding and effort into try to support the development of those vaccines. But at this point, they're still a ways off.
Well, it sounds like us humans, we're always making mistakes and we're always changing.
That's absolutely true.
So help us understand the difference between influenza A and B.
Yeah, I mean, there's three strains of influenza, A, B, and C. And the A's are the ones that tend to recombine as they enter into animals and humans and back and forth. So when you hear about bird flu and swine flu, those A strains that have the ability to infect multiple species. And so as they bounce around between species, they tend to pick up and lose different parts of the virus, and they tend to be much more aggressive. There's really just two strains of influenza B that circulate, Victoria and Yamagata strains. And, you know, I think many people are aware that for many, many years, the flu vaccines only had three strains. So they would have two A strains every year, usually an H1N1 and an H3N2 strain, and then they would have just one or the other of the B strains. And even when I was younger in my career, I always wondered, like, why are we only, you know, essentially flipping a coin on the Bs? And so the pharmaceutical company some years ago finally realized that there was benefit putting both B strains in. But the problem is that, you know, the WHO and CDC still have to make an educated guess way back in January, February of what's going to circulate the following year to design the vaccine and give the companies time to actually make the strains. And so that's the problem, and that's why we get this, you know, something below 70% of efficacy, is that the viruses continue to change, and the best that you can do is sort of look in a crystal ball and guess what's coming. Bees, like I said, tend to come up later in the season usually, and they have traditionally been milder, especially in older individuals. So, you know, currently the rate of hospitalizations for over 65s are actually a little bit below where they usually are because it's such a predominantly B series. And I think people have always wondered why. I think part of it's that they're just less aggressive viruses. I think the other is that since there's only two strains, most people by the time they get into adulthood have had experience either with vaccines or with having actually had one of these flu strains. And so they tend to attack older people in much lower rates. And so that's part of the reason why kids are so vulnerable. And, you know, nationally, unfortunately, when we look at the number of kids who have been vaccinated for flu, you know, unfortunately, we only end up in maybe 25 or 30% of kids in many areas have gotten their flu vaccine. So that combination of an early B strain, the lack of experience with those B strains, and the lack of vaccination in kids is why they're really the epicenter for this current outbreak.
Well, Dr. Conway, stay well. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Absolutely, Kate. Happy to do it anytime. Have a great day.
Dr. James Conway is a professor in the Division of Pediatric Infectious Disease at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Coming up, a Purdue University professor explains a connection between attending live theater and improved learning outcomes for students. Do you recall learning about theater in middle school or high school? Did you like the class? Do you have a better appreciation for the arts because of it? Join in with your experiences being in plays, acting, theater, attending live theater. We're at 800-642-1234. Back after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.